This podcast is brought to you by Formkeep, form endpoints for designers and developers. No iframes, JavaScript embeds, or CSS overrides. Try out our sandbox mode before you buy at formkeep.com.
Did you know that when you search the iTunes store for Build Phase, you get a lot of song results for We Built This City?
Cool.
Which doesn't make sense.
No.
Can we, like, license that song to play in this outro? Would that be worth it? How much money does it cost to, like, license a song for, like, usage?
Oh, it's like fair use under some...
Is it fair use if it's Jefferson Starship?
Do they listen to the show?
Probably not.
I think it's fine. Hey.
Hey.
What's happening?
What's up?
This is good. I like that we're recording today. It's like a before and after. Like, you just showed up.
It does feel like I just showed up.
Well, no, I'm saying you just showed up when we recorded the last episode.
Oh, yeah.
And you're leaving tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like bookended your trip.
Yeah, it's nice.
A little chat. It's good.
I sound really good.
Yeah, yeah.
When I record here.
Yeah, sure.
It's a good setup.
Yeah. I think it's promising that, like, we're still friends after... Just like,
if anything, I think we're better friends.
Sure.
I'm going to go out on a limb.
Yeah, sure. Tom's done with the show.
Later.
So what's up? How was your week? Long?
No, this Short? Week cruised by. Yeah. I know I said that last week. And I know that because I listened to last week's episode today.
You did?
Yeah.
Yesterday?
No, and today.
Oh, you listened to
well,
it
Well, I just like put it on again.
Oh.
Just cool. Just to refresh my memory.
Sure.
No, it's been good. I really enjoy working
out of the office.
Out of this office. Yeah, mm-hmm. This is a nice office. Mm-hmm. The 8th floor is lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's real nice.
The weather this week has been, well, the second half has been great. Enjoyable.
Oh, it's too hot the first half? Is it the?
I mean, it wasn't. Like, honestly, like, here in Boston, it's fine.
Right.
But
out there, just
not as fine.
Gross.
Yeah.
A little humid.
Yeah. No, it's been a good week.
Yeah. What happened? We saw a baseball game.
Oh, yeah.
We went to Fenway.
We saw the first place Houston Astros
mm-hmm.
beat the last place Boston Red Sox.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It was a good game. High scoring.
That was an excellent game. Mm-hmm. That was a long game. Four and a half hours.
Yeah.
10 innings. Mm-hmm. And the craziest, oldest Red Sox fan
mm-hmm.
that has ever existed.
Yeah. We ended up just like walking around Fenway. Because it was just like, our seats were kind of like back undercover, and it was like hot and stagnant air, and like we'd been drinking, so it was just kind of, and then like, we're in the older part of the park, so it was like really, really no leg room. So like, my knees were digging into the seat in front of me, which means your knees were, it was like impossible. And so we ended up walking around Fenway, and ended up back behind this dude, just like hanging, we were just hanging out, and we're behind this old dude who's like, way out in right field, but and like basically behind a pillar, but was convinced that like he was affecting the game by like distracting the Houston batters and like it's like flipping his hands out, like trying to distract him, and was like yelling at people when they started doing the wave during when Boston was at bat. It was incredible. Gave up, totally gave up on the game.
I think that was the best part.
The 10th inning,
yeah. Like once the Astros take. Like a four-run lead.
Yeah.
He just gets up and walks off and is muttering to himself, never again.
Yeah. That was my
Perfect.
Favorite. Yeah.
Perfect. Just so defeated.
Yeah.
He does that literally every week.
Right. No doubt. Yeah, it was a good game, though. I met a bunch of – there were a bunch of people from Houston there, which was crazy to me. I'm not used to seeing other Houston fans, like – poke their heads up.
Right.
but
it's
it was
socially
weird.
Acceptable.
Yeah, it was year. Like it was really weird. It felt like it was like the Astros to some extent are becoming trendy, right? Like that these young stars are like starting to get recognition, and it's kind of cool. It's really cool. Saw a bunch of like Carlos Correa jerseys. It was like Carlos Correa jerseys and then like Jeff Bagwell jerseys and Biggio and like Nolan Ryan and like It was one or the other. It was like there was no. Oh, there was that dude had a Hank Conger jersey, which I was convinced was fake, but then it was a Hank Conger jersey, and I can't imagine why anyone would fake a Hank Conger jersey. It's like our backup catcher. So whatever.
Yeah. You know what's weird about this show? Is that I feel like for the first time ever, we're not telling stories to each other. We're actually talking to the people who listen to the show, and I often forget that those people exist.
Right. Yeah, that is yeah, this is a weird show because we've just hung out all week.
Right.
So there's not much to catch up on here.
No, but there are exciting tales to tell.
Yeah. Just normally I would be telling you or you would be telling me and then we'd be laughing at each other.
Right. Mm-hmm. But in this case we got to experience.
Yeah.
Average Red Sox fan sadness firsthand.
Mm-hmm. What else happened this week? 4th of July. We're recording early. I don't know if that's important. Probably not. We're going to release it on time. We're just not going to record next Friday.
Right. Like a month from now.
Right. What have you been working on? How about that? You can plug your stuff that you guys open sourced.
Oh, yeah. I had a small hand in that.
Mm-hmm. No, whatever. But
contributed a little bit.
Yeah. But it's worth plugging.
Yeah, Static.
Trending on GitHub right now.
Is it trending? Mm-hmm. Last time I checked, it only had 20 stars.
Nope, it's trending right now. Under Swift.
Oh, under Swift. That makes sense. So Static is a Swift framework for building static table views.
Mm-hmm. Which is something we talked about a lot, actually, on the show, I think.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was happy with, like, looking at it when you sent me this, is it feels similar to this structure that we had actually talked about that I did at one of my first clients here at ThoughtBot. I needed to build static table views and I needed a dynamic way to be able to build static table views. And so it was a less polished but very similar abstraction where you build rows and then you hand those rows to sections and then you hand those sections to a table view controller and then the table view controller just handles the rest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in this case, the main driver here is a data source, mm-hmm. which is an NSObject subclass just for you heathens that are still working with Objective-C.
Right. Right.
And it gets initialized with a table view and holds a weak reference to that. And you can optionally initialize it with an array of these section objects, or you can just set these later. You can just blow them out and replace them with sections. And sections are lightweight. Sections have rows, an array of rows. And they also have like a header and a footer. And the rows themselves are just model objects. They're just model objects that represent everything that you're going to display, except they're very extensive. Like, you can almost do everything that you would normally do in a table view with static.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So the one tiny bit that I actually got to contribute here was the handling of accessories, like accessory type, accessory view. It mirrors UI table view cell accessory type and also adds a view, and that's an enum. So, like, view has an associated view. Detail button has an associated closure because it doesn't make sense to have one of those unless you're going to implement accessory button tapped for a row with index path, right?
Yeah, I like that. That's like best practices through opinionated API design.
Yeah, that's exactly. Nice. Yeah, we had a discussion about that, and I was like, I really think, like, if you're going to use this type, you want to know about taps. So it's like, why don't we just enforce that you use this? Mm-hmm. You know, but, like, checkmark is just a plain enum case.
Yep.
Like, nothing there. Disclosure indicator, just a plain case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it just has this sort of unruly initializer on row. It's, like, init with text, detail text, selection, accessory, cell class, context, and UUID, except they all have default arguments, so you really only need to pass in, like, whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if we had tried that in Objective-C, that would have been gross. Like, it either would have been a disgusting initializer, or it's, like, you make a row, and then you have to set all these properties on it.
Right.
But this way, like, when you're building one of these in code, and you have a section, and it's full of rows, it composes really nicely. Like, you can just one line each row as like a member of this array into this section, and it looks really, really good. And we're using it in the shipping version of Venmo right now.
Didn't realize that.
Yeah, in the settings view controller is completely driven by static. That's where it started, and then it's been pulled out.
I didn't realize there was any. I guess I just hadn't been paying attention. I didn't realize how much. Yes, I did. We've talked about this. How much Swift was in?
It's growing pretty quick.
But isn't static Swift 2.0? Is it a previous version of static?
That's a good point. Yeah, so I think whatever exists in the Venmo app still exists right now, but when it was pulled out, it was turned into updated. Like a because we there are a few places where we're doing Swift 2 things, I believe.
Guards and caselet, maybe.
Caselet?
Yeah, it's like, so iflet is actually a shorthand now. Iflet is a shorthand for if caselet. So caselet is like in a switch. I don't know much about this, so I should probably stop talking about it. But there's new like let syntaxes for other things, like I think like while let.
Are you saying you can switch on optional enums now and then do caselet?
Maybe.
Because I used to get really annoyed having to do iflet some enum and then switch inside of it.
Right.
And I always wanted to be able to just be like, no, can I just switch on an optional and not have to wrap everything in some?
Maybe. I don't know enough about this. And it wasn't interesting to me when it went by. Because I'm not doing a lot of this, but I should probably look into it more. Yeah. Hopefully by the time this podcast has come out, I've remembered and have gone and looked into it more. But
awesome.
There's a chance I hadn't, so hey, just send us email or whatever. Like,
yeah, so static is cool. Mm. Super useful.
Yeah, I pinged you about it in Tropos because you have a pull request open in Tropos to bring the settings view. In app. Oh, well, we have to update to 2.0, so there's a problem there.
That, but I want to do that anyway. And right now, I am building that thing in a storyboard, but it's not saving me a lot of code.
Right.
Because I'm still having to make my own enums for each section to sort of handle selections and do the right thing. At this point, I honestly don't see what having it in the storyboard is getting me.
Probably not.
I could
much.
Build it.
A little bit of design, maybe.
But not even. Like, it's just a normal table view that's been styled. And, like, there's one custom cell that, like, has the ThoughtBot logo in it. But that's super easy to do with static because one of the parameters is a cell class.
Mm-hmm.
And you just make it conform to cell type, which has one method, configure, and it takes a row, and you configure yourself. Yeah. So I can just make a cell that just has an image view in it and be like, okay, this one is this cell. Done.
Yeah.
It has a selection that kicks you out to ThoughtBot.com.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. I'm going to move that over.
Yeah. I mean, probably merge the pull request.
Well, yeah. And yeah, because that needs to ship.
Happen. Yeah, sure. It's been sitting there a while.
Yeah. Super excited about having that open source. I think my favorite contributions to Tropos so far have been the localization ones.
Yes.
I didn't even think of that, but like we obviously, you know, made it localizable from the start.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I look one day and I'm like, oh, this just works in Italian now. That's awesome.
Right.
And today we got one in Polish.
Yeah.
And I kind of clicked around and made sure like a few of those were like actual Polish things and like somebody wasn't just like messing with us.
So what we did kind of invisibly to you at this point, invisibly to the exterior thing, right, is like we have so many people, so many bilingual people in the company that the first thing we did was like when we got that Italian one, we just were like, who knows Italian? Can someone comment on this? You know, and make sure that this is okay. So I did the exact same thing. I haven't gotten any hits yet because I don't know if we have any Polish people in the company. But like immediately saying like, if you know Polish, can you comment on this localization pull request? So by the way, if you know Polish, please, we're gonna leave this open for a little while. I'm not gonna merge this in because it's changing the copy for the entire app. And the only thing I'm confused about, and it's could totally just be that I have no idea what Polish is supposed to look like. There are very few capital letters in that localization pull request. Like in the localized version, in the Polish, there's very few capital letters. And I don't know if is that like a Polish thing that you don't capitalize stuff that much? Or is it just not capitalized? Like I just have no idea. I guess I should just ask on the pull request. But part of me wants to just have a Polish person or someone that speaks Polish anyway review the pull request anyway.
Yeah, totally. Because I assume it's just like anything else. Like,
you want two eyes on it, right? Like, I'd want other eyes if I wrote an English translation. Like, every time I write a blog post, I'm like, please
exactly.
Tell me where I'm screwing stuff up, you know? But yeah, no, I love those because it feels like a low overhead contribution that only makes the app better and more accessible to more people. And I don't know, it's a very cool way to be able to offer a unique contribution to something where you can see something and you're like, oh, this app isn't localized for this language that I speak fluently. Like, that's awesome. Because honestly, like, I wish I could do that, right? Like, I'm not bilingual. Like, I don't know any other languages. Not really. So I can't, like, go in and help localize an app for another language. If you can do that, I think that's an amazing contribution that you can make to an application. Because it's hard doing that stuff. Like, really, really hard doing localization. It kind of makes me want to open source all of the localizations for all apps that I make. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was a thing by Mysterious Trousers. I think they were a product company. I don't remember what app they made. But they had a product that was like, it was like a web service. It was like a localization web service. And they had a plugin that you could, or a, like an SDK that you could drop into your app where it would read your localization files, and then if the user like navigated to the settings, they could say like, help translate this app, and then in from inside the app they would then be presented with this sheet that is like, how would you translate this sentence, and then they just type it in, right, and then hit submit, and then it sends it up to the web service, and then all that, and then when they're done it gets compiled into a strings file and then sent to you. It's like, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's, I can't remember what it's called. I should look it up. But
the Tapbots guys did this.
Oh, they did?
They have one public repo on GitHub, and it's Calcbot localization, and it's just the strings files. And so they
that's interesting.
They were just trying it out with Arabic, Japanese, German, Russian, and simplified Chinese. So they just dropped the L projects for those in there.
So they have the actual string, like the empty strings files, basically with the keys. But it's not translated?
I'm looking. Yes. Yes.
Smart. Calvetica, sorry. Mysterious Trousers are the people that made Calvetica. I don't know if you remember that app.
Kind of. That's a calendar app?
Yeah, it was a calendar app.
So what the Calcbot guys did is they dumped the LProj folders for the languages they wanted just to sort of try it out and see how it would go. And it was just sort of up to the community to organize themselves and like get it done. And so there's four types of files in here. There's like a dot strings, which is the actual strings that will be localized. There's a dot strings missing, which is only the strings that need to be localized. There's a dot strings ignore, which would be strings that don't make sense to localize for like this language. Like maybe there's just things that they're proper names or their product names or just something that doesn't need to be translated. And then dot strings comments, which is just like all of them, except it has the actual comments in there for some of the weirder strings to probably explain where is this used. Like here's some context about how it's used.
That's cool.
And then when you edit a file, you just run this Ruby script and it removes the ones you've added from the dot strings missing and adds them to the dot strings, and everything's awesome.
Cool. That's awesome. And then I guess you could pull that in through submodules or through Carthage or...
Yeah. There's nothing in here about it being a framework, so I'd kind of assume they probably just have it as a submodule.
No, it doesn't need to be a framework for Carthage. Like, Carthage will just pull it down. So Carthage, you could just point to it, and Carthage will happily just download whatever you pointed at.
Got it.
And then if it finds a project, then it'll build.
Oh, okay.
But if it doesn't find a project, it's just like, whatever.
I never thought of using Carthage as just like a content delivery.
Yeah, you can absolutely use it that way.
Hmm. Cool.
One of the things I was doing, there's a kind of RFC on result about this, where like I was using Carthage in this way. Because so result defines their own flat map operator. The bracket bracket minus or the angle bracket bracket minus, and they define their own flat map operator, which is fine and it makes sense, right? So like one of the things behind this is Rob Ricks's result, antitypical slash result. One of the whole kind of goals behind this was to, for him or for them, was to not have as many dependencies, right? That this version of result, it should be the de facto standard. And one of the ways to make sure that it can be the de facto standard is to not have dependencies, right? You don't want – the Cocoa community is generally dependency averse. So if you say like – so initially, for example, result dependent on either, and either depended on Box, and either also depended on another one of Rob's frameworks called Prelude, because result is just a fancy either, and either needs Box in Swift, you know, 1.2. Either needed Box to do what it did. And then either also used a bunch of stuff from Prelude internally, and then also externally, like exporting some stuff, right? And kind of the first thing that they did when there was this migration from LlamaKit to Result was to wipe out all the dependencies and to remove the dependency on either and Prelude from Result. You have to keep the Box one because Box, right? But that made sense. But so one of the – so they have their own flat map operator, right? And there's work that has to happen to make sure that the flat map operator for Result doesn't conflict with, for example, the flat map operator defined in Runes. And what happened was there was someone who – I don't remember his name, and I feel bad, but I'll – post a link to the PR because it was an awesome PR. It was one of my favorite PRs to get because someone had gone through and researched the precedences for map apply and flat map operators in Haskell, and like not just like what they were set to at the number value, but what they were in relation to other things, and then contributed that back to Runes. So he tweaked the precedences of all four operators that we define, right? The left and right, flat map, and then map and apply. He tweaked the precedences of those to match their precedence, their relative precedence in Haskell. And I thought that was awesome, and so I merged that, and I cut a release with it, and I called it 2.0, right? So it's like Runes 2.0 has these new precedences. Well, it turns out Swift will happily pull in multiple operator definitions, like the infix operator thing, like actually defining an operator. Swift will happily pull in multiples, like duplicates, as long as they're exactly the same. The second you define the same operator with a different precedence, it flips out and it says that it's ambiguous and it doesn't know which one it should use, which makes sense. So there's work that had to happen in Result in order to keep, he had to change the precedence of his flat map operator to keep up with ours, right? So one of the things I proposed was let's use runes as a central dependency, right? Like don't implement your own flat map operator. Instead, depend on the operator defined in runes, and then we'll all be happy. I think ideally the way that that would work is basically through weak linking. Right? Like the ideal way for this to work would be for Result to say, hey, I'd like to define this flat map operator or this implementation for the flat map operator. If runes is installed, why don't you like here's this implementation, right? That would be perfect, right? If you find runes in the system, then you get this for free. If you don't find runes in the system, then you don't have it. I think that's a totally reasonable thing to do. That's not really feasible in this case, right? You can do weak linking, but because of the way this works, like you can't just dynamically change things behind the scene. Like you can't just weak link runes into Result and have it work. You have to, it just doesn't work. So the proposal that I initially came up with was what if you have another framework that does all the operator stuff and has runes as a dependency. And then when you build Result, you get Result and Result runes or Result operators or whatever the hell you want to call it, right? That has both. And now that's using the runes operator definitions and provides some implementations and blah, blah, blah. But then that sucks because then you have every time you download Result, now you have three frameworks, like through Carthage, you'd have three frameworks that would get installed. It's just like that sucks, right? That's not good because the user would have to know, oh, okay, I wanted this, so I only need Result, or I wanted the runes stuff, so I need to get the runes version of Result and runes itself. Pain in the ass. So basically, what we kind of came to is maybe we just pull just the operator definition file out of runes. So I name it like runes.swift. All it is the operator definitions. And then use Carthage and to download runes, but then only link to that specific source file. So you never build runes. You never declare runes itself as a dependency. You just pull it in through a submodule and then link just to that file. And so then you can easily just, now we only have to update it in one place. And if other things want to update to stay in sync, then they have to do that still, right? But then it's just changing what version of runes they're linking against instead of actually changing their source code, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So, yes, that was a really long way to, that was a really long story, I feel like. But
so what's the plan going forward on that?
I don't know. It's still open. It's still in RFC. I haven't merged those changes into runes that need to happen. I probably will merge those changes into runes just because I think like they're inconsequential changes. But I don't know. I don't know what the status of that is. And I'm not pushing it because it's not a huge deal right now. And I think everybody's kind of like, I know we're doing it with Argo, and I think they're doing it to a certain extent with Result, just kind of like sitting back and waiting to see how Swift 2.0 shakes out and how this throws stuff shakes out. Because if the throws stuff improves a little bit, then maybe we ditch, maybe Result just goes away, right? Like there's that possibility where it's like, okay, Result is a monadic way to handle error, to do error handling, and I like that more, but maybe it doesn't make sense to continue to use it if we're just going to be fighting the system the whole time. Kind of the same thing with Argo, right? We're in kind of very much the same place with Argo, where we're going like throws, like we didn't expect that. That was very, very unexpected for us on Argo. And so we're kind of sitting back now going like, what does Argo look like in Swift 2.0? Do we stay the course and push forward with like monads? Like it literally doesn't work the same without monads. Like the second Tony rewrote huge chunks of it to use throw instead of basically our decoded type, and the decoded type goes away completely, and curried functions go away completely, and map and apply go away completely. Just all of that is gone, and instead all you do is you're basically what it looks like you're doing is just force unwrapping stuff, right? But it's like a safe version of force unwrap, because you have to do that in a try catch block, right?
Right.
And so any one of those decode operations can fail at that point. But it looks nothing, it's not the same thing. Like it is not like Argo as written with throw under Swift 2.0 is not the Argo that we have today.
No.
At all.
And the Argo you have today was started at a time when Swift was at 1.0. Before that. Right? You didn't have multiple iflets yet.
No.
And, like, I think the updates to Swift have slowly been kind of coming along and, like, chipping away. Like, I don't see it as, like, attacking what Argo was, but it's like Argo was making up for deficiencies in Swift, and it did a good job of it.
Yeah. I'm all about... I've said this a number of times on the show. It's like I'm more than happy to be Sherlocked by Apple. Like that's all I ever want with any of this stuff, right? Like I'm happiest when I'm just deleting code out of runes. I'm happiest when we can remove features from Argo because they get implemented by default. I would have been really happy if Result had been pulled into the standard library. I know that Rob Ricks would have been happy too because he doesn't like maintaining it. Like I don't care about my own involvement in these things that much. I just want this solution. The problem is that like they've been chipping away and they've been getting closer or removing the deficiencies that we're trying to solve to a certain extent, but then they've been also just kind of moving in a different direction where Argo works this way and it works through type inference and like they don't have anything. They still don't. So they have the multiple iflets so you don't get the Pyramid of Doom, but you still have to do casting on every single one.
Right.
So there's still, like, it's like even with Swift 1.2's version of Ifletz, it's still much uglier and there's much more duplication, especially now in Swift 2.0, when now we can just write curry. So I wrote a curry framework yesterday, just kind of for shits and giggles. And I wrote it, so I wrote curry out to 15. I actually wrote it out to 26 arguments. So types A through Z with a return type of double A, right? So a function, curry a function that takes 26 arguments, right? It was ridiculous to write. But so I wrote it out to 26 arguments, and it just wouldn't compile. Like, it just doesn't compile in Swift. And so, like, I just started commenting them out one at a time until I got it to a point where it compiles. Turns out, like, after 15 arguments, the compile times are moving exponentially at that point. So it's like a single file with curry written out to 15 arguments. So that's 14 implementations of curry. So curry written out to 15 arguments takes, like, 2 seconds to compile. 16 arguments, so 15 takes 2 seconds, 18 arguments takes a full 10 seconds. 19, I didn't wait around to see how long it took 19 to compile. So I commented everything back to 15 arguments. It was just like, put a comment there. It's like, compile times are exponential past this. It's like a nod to that tuple file in Haskell, which I'll link to, which is hilarious. It's like this implementation of like tuple creation out to some astronomic level, and it looks like just a pyramid, like it just looks like a triangle. And then at some point, it's just a comment block, and there's a comment at the top that says like, Rodrigo says that the compiler seg faults past this point. But it's like such an astronomical number. Like I feel safe putting this out there with 15 arguments. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? 26 would have been ridiculous if that would have just compiled. I would have been really impressed. But 15 arguments is like fine. But so I wrote this curry framework specifically because in Swift 2.0 now we can pass initializers as functions. So now we don't even need to have people write that create function. Now we can just do return curry init and then the normal argo stuff. Like that's going to be it. It's going to be so clean, so nice. So like as they remove deficiencies, right? Again, that curry thing was there to work around a deficiency in the system where you couldn't curry initializers because you couldn't pass them as functions. As they remove those things, they move in a different direction. And I don't like Argo with throws. Like, I really don't. I think it's a worse experience. I don't know. That's,
is it because it's less useful?
I definitely think it's less powerful. I think it's much less powerful. I think that the fact that it's a perfect example. Here's a perfect example. In my project right now, we're doing side loading, right? So we have side loaded. There's this whole freaking conversation that's been going on for literally a week over here about this JSON API spec. And it's been because me and Tony have been upstairs throwing a hissy fit for the past week about the JSON API spec. But one of the big things in JSON API is that you side load objects. So if I have people, and people have an associated company, well, you don't nest that in the JSON, right? You don't have people and then each person has a company nested inside. Instead, you have people and then each person has like a company IDs field, which relates to, then there's another top level companies thing, which has all the companies in it. And so you would need to create the person. It gets complicated, especially in a statically typed system where you want to use, you know, we want to use immutable value objects. We want to use structs with immutable properties. So I need that company relationship at the time of the person's creation. I can't create a person without having a company, but it's not in the same JSON. So I have to stop my parsing of the JSON and go fetch this other thing. And then add that back in. It just adds so much overhead. And everything that deals with this is doing like classes or you know, relies on the Objective-C runtime, stuff like that. But we were able to solve it. Tony specifically was able to solve it by using partial application. So in our decoder that uses Argo, instead of returning a fully created person, we'll just keep going with this analogy. Instead of returning a fully created person, it returns a decode, like inside this decoded monad, right? This is like Monad deep dive stuff, but it returns a function that takes a company and that returns the person, right? And it's still wrapped inside that same decoded context. In Argo, that's literally just returning early. That's having the right type signature and just not including that last line in your parser. Now you're just going to return a function. And then in this higher up function outside of the person model, right, we have this parser that's actually taking the data, the NS, or really the JSON, but takes the JSON, does whatever transformations it needs to do, and then returns a user or a person, whatever. At that point, we parse out the company first and then parse the person out to the point where all we need is to apply the company, and then we apply the company and then return that. And so it was like a really slick way around this problem that we were running into that we were really worried about. We could not figure out how to do it inside this system. And it just worked. It was really, really nice. That would be impossible in Argo that uses throws instead of...
Got it.
Instead of a partial application.
Got it. You lost me there for a bit, but then...
Sorry.
I was confused about where you're going, but...
Yeah,
I get it.
That solution is made possible because we're using monads and because we're using an applicative monad or applicative functor specifically. If it wasn't for that, we would have to make these sacrifices and we would have to make compromises for our model objects. I think we'd have to make compromises for our model objects in a way that we don't have to make that same compromise now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I felt rambly. Was that rambly?
No, it wasn't too rambly.
A little rambly?
No. Wasn't too rambly.
Okay. What else? You want to wrap it up?
Yeah, we can wrap it up.
It's hot in here.
A little bit. And also, I'm out of beer.
Yeah, that's a good sign.
I'm out of beer, so...
See you later, nerds. Let's
cut this short.
All right. I don't know what episode this is. 88.
How do you know that?
Because I know that the last one was 87. We just increment. Do you not?
Oh!
Right.
I get it, man. I see it. Show notes for this episode are going to be found at buildphase.fm/88.
And as always, we'd like to hear from you, so email us at buildphase@thoughtbot.com or reach out on Twitter at buildphase. And we always appreciate ratings and reviews on iTunes.
Cool. All right. Yeah.
Do we get ratings and reviews on iTunes?
I don't know. I haven't checked in a while.
I'm checking.
We can call people out.
Yeah.
Good job, Jacob.
That's my favorite thing to do. Build face. Mm-hmm. We have a perfect 5-star rating.
Mm-hmm.
37 reviews.
It's not bad.
37. So thank you, every single person that listens to the show, for eventually going and rating the show.
Right. Yeah, we got to stop recording now.
Okay.
All right. See you
later.
I don't know why I'm saying bye again.